just got to get that mentality that we got to score every time we're on the field. If we do that, then the sky's the limit for us.
Welcome to the Davenport Cleaners Halftime Show on KSCJ. Here's your host, Brian Vakulskas.
In 2017, a scandal rocked the National Basketball Association. NBA referee Tim Donaghy leveraged his relationships with colleagues, coaches, and players to bet on professional basketball games. During an unrelated mob investigation, the FBI stumbled upon the scam and actively pursued legal action against everyone involved. Next month, a movie about the scandal, Inside Game, will be released in theaters nationwide. Here's the trailer.
My job puts me on the inside, right? So I know things that regular guys don't.
An airport hotel lounge. What are we, getting laid before dinner?
Far from it, buddy.
What is wrong with you? I could be seen with a bookie.
I could lose my job for this.
Relax. I was just a couple of friends having drinks.
$5,000 per win. Guaranteed.
It's a free roll, Dimmick. I pay your wins and I eat your losses.
We're not gonna get caught. It's a license to print money. No risk.
All we're waiting on is for you to say yes.
Pleasure doing business, boys. From here on out, and for as long as we do this, you and I cannot be seen together. Tommy's going to be our go-between. We will communicate using these. Gentlemen, we only talk in code, okay? Always assume that someone's listening.
Nobody can know about this but us. All right, you keep your heads down, your mouth shut. There's no reason we can't do this forever.
It's easy money.
It's only easy till it isn't.
It's going to be a good year.
Got your money?
Yeah.
And you are?
With you. My name's Sasha.
Hiya.
By the way, when can you get me another bag of that stuff that you got?
Bag I brought you this morning?
See, if your NBA ref friend can't magically turn it into 1.2 million for you,
you have exactly 1 week.
Every whistle seems legit.
He's gotta be fixing these games.
I need him to guarantee a win, okay? I need a lock. They're gonna kill me. Do you realize this, Tommy?
What have you done to this family?
Are you gonna do this for me or not?
The FBI knows. This is about my life, my career, my family.
You need your own plan!
Fix this.
You're the only one who can.
They might know what we did, but they can't prove that we did it.
That's a subpoena to appear before a federal grand jury.
Can I take the fifth right now? Or is that something that I gotta show up in person to do?
Did you ever wager on games that you officiated as an employee of the National Basketball Association?
You ever feel bad about that?
About what? The naked chicks on my couch or the $40,000 in my carry-on?
My guest is former NBA referee Tim Donaghy, who, along with a couple childhood friends from Philadelphia, started betting on NBA games that Tim was reffing. It eventually attracted the attention of the FBI, and Tim wound up serving 15 months in a federal prison. His book, Personal Foul, a first-to-person account of the scandal that rocked the NBA, is still available through Amazon and other booksellers. It's in paperback now, and I read it over the weekend, last weekend, and it's just an excellent book. It took me about an hour and a half, 2 hours to get through, and I never even got up off the couch. But the story is also the subject of a new movie, Inside Game, that will be released next month as the NBA season gets underway. Tim, Inside Game, it's not your story, but rather the story from the perspective of one of the other players in the scandal, right?
Yes, Tommy Martino, his cousin, Paulie Martino, was a venture capitalist out in Silicon Valley, and they got together and did a script and tried to get me on board early, but I really just wasn't interested. I was at the point where I was hoping the story just kind of died, but it just seems like every couple of years somebody's knocking on my door, whether it's Sports Illustrated or ESPN, to do some type of article, or somebody's knocking on the door to do a documentary. So it's just a story that seems like it would never die, and after they made the movie, they came back again and showed it to me, and I felt like there was a good message in the movie about choices and how those choices affected so many people that, you know, I'm on board now and enjoying the movie as every time I watch it.
So as you watch the movie, were there things in there that you just kind of let go because it didn't jive with your story?
For sure. There's different things in there. They have me, doing different things, smoking weed, drinking bourbon, those little kind of things just, never happened the way they're portraying it to happen. So the ending's a little different than what really happened. They have all three of us together when we're dealing with the FBI and the United States Attorney, and really we're all separated at that point. So A few little things, but it's about 90% realistic.
Okay, so let's back up now. There were three of you at the beginning of this, you and Tommy Martino and Baba Batista. So what were your individual roles as this whole thing got started?
You know, Batista was the guy that moved the money. He was the one that placed the bets. Tommy was the one that was the go-between between Batista and myself and delivered money to me. And I, of course, was the one that was providing the picks and the inside information based on my position as an NBA referee.
As I read your book, the one thing that you made clear several times in the book was just how easy it was for you to pick these games. So what was the formula?
Basically, it was relationships that existed between referees and players, referees and coaches, and referees and owners, and those relationships were either positive or negative, and it spilled out onto the floor. It was a situation where, you know, as referees, we would have meetings in the morning and before a game, and we talk about certain things and what we're going to do in the game that night. And in my determination, it affected the line by sometimes 5 or 6 points, and I passed that information along to people that were placing bets.
Is the line something that you could pick pretty easily, or could you pick other things? First half unders, you know, the first half unders and overs, over under for games, or was it always the line?
It was always just the line. It was always a team. It was never an over or under or anything like that. It was just you know, picking a side in the game.
So as you decided to get involved in doing this, were you even amazed at yourself at the accuracy, or was this something you could do in your own mind before you were even betting?
I think it was something I could do in my own mind before I was even betting, because it was so, you know, abundant worth of information that was out there between the referees, and we would laugh and, you know, watch each other on TV and joke around about what certain referees did in the games and how they treated certain players and stuff at the other players. So, you know, I always thought that, it would be extremely easy to pick the games.
And you guys would even make little side bets in the referees' room before the games about who's going to tee up Allen Iverson, things like that, right?
Yeah, who would call the first foul of the game, who would give out the first technical foul. You know, there were a lot of those things that took place in the locker room before the game just to add a little bit of fun to the game.
So when you first started betting with Tommy and Batista, what was your cut?
It was $2,000 a game. I think in the movie they might spice it up to $5,000 a game, but it was always just $2,000 a game for every win, and no harm if there was a game that lost, but there wasn't many of those.
So was there any pressure on you as you were doing this from the beginning?
There was pressure at one point. I think we lost 3 games in a row, and Batista was getting a little bit upset, and that was the only time there was any really pressure on me. We won so much that there was never any pressure.
So what dollar amounts are we talking about that Batista's getting down on these games?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the FBI agents told me if it wasn't for the fact that millions of dollars were going into the coffers of organized crime out of New York, that they really wouldn't have gotten involved in the case, but just too much money was at stake.
Well, and the FBI really stumbled onto this just by accident, right?
My understanding, it was heard over a game being a wiretap, so I guess it was just kind of by accident, but once they heard it, they started to do some backtracking and figured out that it was me.
You describe in pretty good detail in the book the moment that you all of a sudden found out the FBI was involved. Can you take us back to, I think you were on the golf course, right?
I was. I just got a new set of ping irons. I was excited. I went to the driving range, and I got a call from Tommy Martino, who told me that the FBI had been at his house 3 times. And, you know, my heart sank because, you know, he's calling me now after the 3rd time. So at that point, I knew I was in a lot of trouble. I knew it was about me. And I think from that point on, I probably lost about 30 pounds in the next 30 days. I went from 175, just dropping weight, and I was just looked sickly. And it just bothered me to the point where I went to an attorney, and he called the United States attorney that was working the case, and he flat out said to him, you know, you tell Tim Donaghy, we know what he did, we know who he did it with. He's better off coming to us before we come to him, because he's going to lose his job, but if we have to come get him, not only is he going to lose his job, he's going to go to jail for a long, long time. So with that, I went and got on a plane the next day and went to New York.
And that was against your lawyer's advice, right?
Yeah, he wanted me to sit back and keep quiet and let it play out, but you know, I knew I was the big fish in the whole thing. I knew there was too many people involved, and I thought it was in my best interest and my family's best interest if I went up there immediately.
And your family didn't know anything about it, even when you first met with them, right?
No, it wasn't for a few weeks after I started, discussing the whole thing with the FBI that, you know, I finally sat down and told my wife and my parents. So it was very difficult at that time.
Chatting with Tim Donaghy about the new movie Inside Game and about his book Personal Foul, a first-person account of the scandal that rocked the NBA. Tim, as you got that call from Tommy Martino, you guys really didn't have any contact, you, Batista, and Martino, after that for a long time, right?
No, it was. We were told during the investigation not to talk to each other by the FBI agents. And, of course, the whole year before I went to jail, I didn't talk to him. I went to jail and obviously didn't talk to him at that time. And it wasn't until, afterwards, a couple of years that went by that we started to communicate. And the reason I didn't want to talk to Tommy was because I felt he was in on it with Batista coming down to the Marriott Hotel that day. But I've since found out that Batista kind of tricked Martino into bringing him down to me as if it had nothing to do with me providing picks for him. So Batista kind of manipulated not only myself, but Tommy Martino.
Your book is full of stories about relationships between the players and coaches and people. And this story wasn't in the book, but I've heard you tell it before. There was a particular moment, Dennis Rodman, pregame warmups. He was telling you about a particular affliction he had. Can you share that story?
Yeah, he told me, he was going up for layups, and after every layup, he was sticking his hands down his pants and scratching himself. And after about the third or fourth time, I said to him, Dennis, what the heck are you doing? What's going on here? This isn't looking good. And he said that he had almonds, and almonds had flared up his herpes. So, all I was thinking about after he did that was this guy's probably going to get 15 rebounds tonight, and he's going to have his hands all over this ball, and I'm going to be touching it all night too. So, that was just a story that kind of just grossed me out.
But you would have these relationships with players, and you'd talk to them. There were good guys, bad guys in the NBA, and it seems like the ones that are a-holes off the court are a-holes on the court. Was that pretty much consistent with what you saw?
For the most part, but, what you have to realize is these guys are very competitive when they step on the floor, and their emotions get the best of them. For the most part, they can turn it on and off. There are some guys that are difficult both on and off the court. But for the most part, I found that they're different on the court than off the court, and they're pretty good guys.
And then there was another story that you told in the book about Shaquille O'Neal and you with an encounter while you were in the shower, right?
That was Charles Barkley.
Barkley, that's right.
There was a problem on the floor, and I ended up giving him a technical foul and having a problem with Rudy Tomjanovich. But when we got in the locker room, we figured out that I was right. I went and had a conversation with Rudy, and we had a bet about it. And Rudy admitted that he owed me dinner, and he went back into the locker room and gave Charles a bunch of grief. And with that, Charles came into our locker room, and I was in the shower and picked up the Gatorade bucket, took all the drinks out of it, and poured the bucket of ice on me, and kind of danced out laughing, and just thought that it was extremely funny.
Well, and you could have gotten him in a lot of trouble for that, right?
I think he would have probably been suspended and fined a lot of money, but I'll never forget, talking to Bernie Fryer, who was the crew chief on the game that night. He says, listen, you turn him in, he's going to get fined, he's going to get suspended, but if you don't turn him in, he's going to love you for life. And I ended up not turning him in, and every time I saw him, he gave me a big hug and a big greeting, and he knew that I kind of saved him probably $100,000.
At the point when the scandal all erupted, what type of money were you making just reffing games?
Probably about $350,000 a year with everything.
So is that kind of consistent with what they make now? It's got to be more than that, right?
I'm not sure what they make now. I would think it's pretty much consistent. It's based on year service, and also playoff games and airline money. I don't know if they're still doing that with the referees, but it was a bunch of different things that added that up.
And then the NBA and David Stern takes kind of a beating in your book, and he has in the media too, but there were some officials that got involved in all kinds of crazy things, and the NBA, it's kind of like the military. If some are inept, they seem to get promoted, and it happens in the NBA refereeing, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's just comical. Like, you look at the three referees who refereed that famous Game 6 between Sacramento and Los Angeles, where the game was so screwed up and Sacramento lost and probably should have won a championship that year. And they had such a poor game, they came out and said the referees did an awful job, but yet they all were promoted to referee in the NBA Finals that year. So it just kind of, if they did such a poor job, you think that they would have, you know, not advanced them to the finals.
Did you ever have a conversation with David Stern after the scandal erupted?
No, my attorney offered for us to go up there and speak to him, and we, you know, talked over the phone very briefly, and we were waiting to hear from them, and we never heard back from them.
What is, when you found out that, you know, that your career was done as officiating, because I think the season was over, right, by this point?
Yes.
So you ended the season not knowing. When you got how were you notified that you were fired?
I wasn't fired. I actually resigned. I sent a fax in and resigned my position, from the league before they, you know, found out what was going on.
So as you did that, that's got to be, I mean, of all the things that you went through, this officiating, I've known officials over the years, it's in their blood, it's part of who they are. That had to be probably one of the most memorable moments of all the things you've been through.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a sad moment for me. I never forget sitting at that fax machine and putting the fax through, and it was just, one line, one sentence, and with that, my career was over and done, and really the worst was just ahead of me to come. So it was just, one bad choice after another that put me in the position I was in.
Something else I found interesting from your book, Phil Scala, the FBI agent who was really in charge of this investigation for at least a portion of it, he wrote the foreword of the introduction to your book and has a lot of praise for you and what you did. What was that relationship like? Because it seems like it would just be naturally adversarial.
You know, I got to be honest. He was very fortunate that he was on the case. I think that he understood that I stumbled into something. I made a lot of bad choices, but I was remorseful for what I did. I think he also realized that there was a lot of things within the NBA's organization that was at fault with this whole thing and needed to be corrected. And with that, you know, he was retiring from the FBI, and we became friendly with each other, and from time to time we'll speak to each other.
All right. Since you got out of the, all this is behind you now, and other than talking about it to people in the media, I guess, and with the movie coming out, you're involved in, you run RefPicks.com. Tell me about that.
You know, RefPicks.com is just a little bit of a consulting firm that I'm involved with for people that are using gambling as a form of entertainment, and I kind of guide them through the pitfalls of, what you should do and what you shouldn't do to kind of stay out of trouble with it. So, it's just something, a little side thing that I have among some other things that I'm involved in.
Can you, this erupted because you got addicted to gambling, and so are you able to gamble any recreationally now, or is it like an alcoholic, you just can't touch it?
You know, I stay away from it because it caused so many problems for me and my family, so I think if I go near it, it would, possibly escalate to more problems, so I just kind of keep my distance from it.
And the thing that I remember in your book, the gambling addiction all started very innocently, just making little bets on a golf course, right?
Yeah, I mean, I played golf. I loved to play golf, and we were always gambling, and it just escalated to, more and more bets on more and more different things, playing cards in the locker room, running down to Atlantic City, betting on college and professional sporting events, and then spilled into me betting on the NBA.
And with the way that it all shook out for you, do you have that turning point in your life? Was there any time you look back, or can you not even look back and just have regret and just move forward?
No, I'm always going to have regret. You know, I think about it a lot, and it's something that is a good reminder for everybody else about how important choices are in life, and how these choices not only affect ourselves but affect the people we love the most, and that's our family, and that's what's portrayed really well in the movie.
And the thing that I found so interesting from the book is how it seems like it's easy to manipulate a point spread if you know how the officiating is going to go down. Is that unique to the NBA, or as you watch other sports, can that play out that way in other sports?
I think it can play out certainly in other sports. You look at NFL and the subjectivity of holding at the line of scrimmage. You know, some officials call it and some officials don't let it go. When the game's at a whack and a team's winning 30-0, they're not going to throw as many flags as if it's a close game. So I think the problem is in all these sports is you need the referees to enforce the rules as they're written in the rule book and not worry about the time, score, names on front and backs of jerseys. just go out and officiate the games.
All right. Well, the book is Personal Foul, a first-person account of the scandal that rocked the NBA. The new movie is Inside Game. It's going to be released next month as the NBA season gets underway. Tim, you're an absolute inspiration for all you've been through to be able to share your story and continue talking about it, even though I know you wish this was all behind you. But I thank you for joining us to talk about it.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me.
That was former NBA referee Tim Donaghy. We'll be back with more high school football right here on KSCJ.